Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The companion documentary to The Great American Read, South Dakota Authors and Their Hometowns, premieres tonight at 8:30 p.m. Central, 7:30 Mountain on SDPB-TV. SDPB's Andrew Bork and I hit the road this summer to visit book authors and book lovers where they live and work. We ask them how where they live impacts how they write. We ask them what makes a really great book. Norma Wilson, Jerry Wilson, Patrick Hicks, Jim Rees, Dan O'Brien, and Lily Mendoza are all featured tonight on SDPB-TV. Jim Rees is a writer, poet, and associate professor of English at Mount Marty College in Yankton. During our visit, he shared his work as a writing teacher at the federal prison and reflected on how being in a place that one would rather leave changes the women and men who write in prison.
The big thing we try to do in my classrooms, in the prisons, is to get the guys to come to terms with their place that they're at in their life right now and the emotional instabilities that brought them to prison in the first place. Because if you don't do that, you're going to send an angry person right back out into society. So through writing, that's probably one of the key elements that will help them realize, hey, this is now where I've landed. What can I do to change things? So it's very important, probably more important than place in a lot of other literature, I would imagine.
Yeah. It's a place they don't want to be, really.
No, but I've also heard sometimes by students in my class at the prisons that they say, you know, this is what I needed. I needed to be in this place to make this change. So that also happens. But it's that inner reflection and coming to terms with everything that's going on to help them change and hopefully be a better person.
Do they remember the place that they were, their hometowns, where they came from? And do you see that showing up in that process?
And I mean, they'll write about anything, you know, just like any other writer. And I have, literally after a year of classes, I mean, we've gone through hundreds and hundreds of prompts, anything from write about a fast car to write about sleeping in a strange bed to the last time I saw my mother or father was, you know, all these prompts that hopefully trigger a memory, whether it be about a place or an event, and they write about them. So we go through lots of those at the beginning of class, and we just go from there and see where the stories take us.
What about in your own work? Is there a sense of place that you see, you know, you want to return to again and again?
Well, I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, and then, but I've spent so much time in smaller towns. So I keep coming, you know, I write a lot about that, whether it be Northeast Nebraska or Yankton, South Dakota, you know, the Midwest. So I'm always writing about that. But also at the same time, the nonfiction that I've been working on so much has to do with working in the prisons, you know, because I spend so much time every week there with these men, you know, and it's the state prisons, the federal prisons, prisons throughout the country that I'm visiting now and talking to people there, whether it be San Quentin, you know, so all these places. And it's a place that nobody really gets to see, except a lot of people get to see it sensationalized on TV. And that's not what I see, you know. And so by telling those stories about these men and women that I work with now in prisons, and really telling readers what the place is, I think will have a big impact. I mean, the reality is one in every three people in America of working age has some sort of criminal record. Those are scary statistics. So we have to really examine what's going on in the country and look at what we can do to make a difference. And we also know after a five-year bipartisan study by the RAND Corporation, that every dollar spent in prison education equates to $5 taxpayer savings. So education works. And getting men and women to write about their emotions and their place, where they're at, really can help. So that's, you know, and I find after now 12 years of doing this, you know, I never signed up to do this. It just kind of fell into my lap, and I was always a guy that walked both sides of the track, you know. You know, I'm not necessarily a liberal professor who's soft on crime, but I've learned a lot about the whole criminal justice system, and everything that I've learned about these places is what I want to share, too, with my writing.
Let's talk about character in fiction. As a reader, take me back to when you were younger, what you were reading, and what sort of characters you were drawn to. And are they the same now that you're an adult and a writer? Or has it changed?
You know, I looked at that list of all the books and all the books that really meant something to me, and I kept, you know, right away I said, I hope The Outsiders is there on that list, and it was. You know, I was young reading books like, oh geez, How to Eat Fried Worms, Freckle Juice, you know, some of those typical books that a lot of kids read, a lot of choose your own adventure books. So there is the action, which, you know, was interesting. But then The Outsiders was a really cool book with the characters in that book to me. And I maybe was, you know, sixth grade, I'm guessing, seventh grade, maybe sooner. It seems like I was reading a lot at that age. So, but those characters were interesting to me because you could, you know, a guy like me, I lived on both sides of those tracks. So I understood both of those environments, what S.E. Hinton was writing about. And I think the overall, one of the overall themes to try to fit in, right? These kids are struggling, whether they have well-to-do families or not well-to-do families. And so those characters were interesting in how they interacted with each other. And at that time, you're trying to find your own place too, as a kid. So that really, you know, so all those characters really stuck with me, you know, whether it be 2-Bit or Soda Pop Curtis, or Johnny, you know, stuff like that. So all these. And then what also was cool about that book for me was, you know, they're talking about poetry. And at the same time, I was attempting to play the guitar and try to write some songs of my own. And they were probably pretty horrible. But I was trying. And there was this poetry going on, and there was rhythm and stuff with music. And then here's this Robert Frost poem in The Outsiders, in the book, and the characters are reading it to each other, and they're guys, and you're thinking, oh, here's some guys that are talking about poetry. Oh, maybe this can be kind of cool. So,
have you read it as an adult?
You know, I was looking at just some of the quiz questions my daughter recently had after she read the book. Yeah. So, you know, everybody's still reading it. I asked, I was at the prison yesterday, and I asked the students there if they had read it, and only 3 out of the 18 had. So I said, hey, maybe we should take a look at this, because I think it's a book for all ages still. So that definitely had an influence on me. Some other books, a lot of books that had influences with the characters were more nonfiction books. I was reading Hunter S. Thompson right away. But Kurt Vonnegut had some interesting characters in his books too. I had a lot of books growing up, which is great. I mean, another statistic I hope that people are talking about, and the author, is it Megan O'Donnell? McDonald, that does the Judy Moody books.
McDonald, maybe.
I hope so.
I have to look it up.
Okay, yeah. Megan, so she does the Judy Moody, right, and Stink books. Right. So she was telling me, you know, she was doing workshops with kids. And she said, you know, I asked them all to bring in a book from their house the next day for our class. And a lot of the kids just brought in magazines and they tore the covers off of them, because they didn't have any books at home. So I think statistics, something that I saw recently was, you know, in middle-income families, it's 13 books for every one child. For low-income families, it's one book for every 200 children. That's, you know, that's really sad. So we have to try to figure out how to encourage reading and get those books out there for the kids, because that is, I think, just such a, that is the key element for imagination, for creativity, for entertainment. You know, these black words on white paper can take them to another world outside of maybe somewhere that's not so good.
You mentioned Hunter S. Thompson and Kurt Vonnegut, and it occurs to me that those are characters in and of themselves.
Yeah.
What's the author's role as character? Does that...
Well, I think why I like working in the prisons right now, and why I like talking about that, and why I like Hunter S. Thompson, it's the idea of gonzo journalism. It's the idea of immersing yourself in the story. I don't think any writer should attempt to write anything unless they've lived the story. I really think you need to do your research. And I've always believed that. And I've always, because I've always had an interest in journalism and was in journalism, and I think it's just so important. I mean, I'm always going to say nonfiction trumps fiction any day, if it's done well. So I think those characters are important. You also have to learn how to distance yourself from the subjects at certain times. Hunter S. Thompson didn't always do that. But then there is great investigative journalists, and I shouldn't say the word journalists, great investigative reporters like Charles Bowden, who passed away recently, who spent, you know, the last 10 years of his life covering the war on drugs and the murder capital of the world in Juarez. He taught me a lot about how to ask the right questions, what to ask, how to listen, be a very good listener, which I'm still working on. But to get those stories that really matter. I mean, at the end of the day, why are we writing? I mean, I hope that what we're doing is making a difference.
Kurt Vonnegut wrote about a conversation he had about World War II with another author, and he was saying, you know, if it weren't for that, what would we write about? You know, we would be here. One of the things I think, and you were one of the first authors that really opened that door for me as a poet, was, and I've told you this story before, but it was a poem about being in the backyard with your daughter, and she almost falls, and she almost hits her head on the concrete, and you catch her at the last minute. And it's just the most beautiful poem because you capture this everyday thing, and yet you capture what it means to be a dad so well in that poem. So it's almost contrary to what Vonnegut was joking about, which is we would have nothing to write about if we hadn't had a major crisis. You write about every day, taking your daughter to dance class, being, showing up for work in the morning, seeing bumper stickers on cars and finding that they tell a story and there's a narrative there. Talk a little bit about writing about what the ordinary, what's around you, what you see, and seeing it better because you have written about it.
Well, I think that has to do with growing up sometimes in the place that we're at, right? You got to look at some of the ordinary things going on around us and try to make them extraordinary. What is the neat thing about what's going on around us? And we live in a place where there's not as much excitement as maybe on the East or West Coast, according to some people. And then I had teachers like Ted Kooser that I really watched. That magical stuff happened to him when he won the Pulitzer Prize, became the United States Poet Laureate, and I watched how he carried himself and also what he was doing with his writing, which was capturing everyday moments. And then there's a guy like Bill Clefcorn, who wrote about being from a small Kansas town, and his dad was a poor dirt farmer, and his grandparents were poor and lived in this rural town, very small. But he made that town just so magical, and how they had their fun and made fun and for themselves and found adventure. And that really rubbed off on me because they were some of the first writers that came into my college classrooms, and I got to see them. And I thought, wow, you can write about that? You know, I think one of the first writers was a playwright that came into, I went to a library to watch him read. And he was playing in the minor, he just got done playing in the minor leagues. He was a bullpen catcher. And he was writing about all those guys on the team. And they knew they were never going to make it to the major league. And if they did, they weren't going to be there long enough to collect a pension. You know, and it talked about all those struggles that they were having. And that's about the same time the movie Major League was coming out. So I thought, hey, you know, I've played on these teams before. I played on... you know, we can write about that guy mowing his yard right there. But I played on those teams before, and I wasn't very good. And I always thought writing had to be this magical, triumphant thing. We can't write about it unless this huge thing happens. I always believed that for some reason. I don't know where that necessarily came from. Maybe because the TV and movies I was watching. But then to see how cool these stories were of everyday life and everyday places, the Midwest, these small towns where we were from, I thought, oh, I can do this, you know? And then starting to do that, write about some of my failures, and writing about, you know, the the mishaps and things that didn't go right seemed to work. That poem that you mentioned, yeah, I can still picture that day vividly. And it just scared us. We were young parents, just like, you know, anything, you know, we're trying to protect our kids. And, you know, my daughter almost tripped, and luckily she didn't, but it was one of those things that I knew other people could relate to. At least I hope so.
What makes a really good book to you? What do you look for? You have so many options for what you can read, so many authors that you know and bump up against.
We were at the Library of Congress I was there 2 years ago, recording a show for their Poet and the Poem, and I did some statistics there, and every time I say this out loud, I have to say, is that right? It doesn't sound right, but there's like 13,000 books coming through circulation at the Library of Congress, getting published and stuff per day, if 5 days a week. So, and that's all over the world, right? And maybe not all of those are hardcover books. And I would have to, I'm pretty sure those are the statistics. It was 12 or 13,000. And I was trying to visualize that. How many books is that? That's insane. And where do you put them all? So there's just so much stuff out there. How do you choose a good book? I mean, you start reading it, and if it doesn't do anything for you, then you go find another one real quick. That's kind of, I used to have that idea, like I have to, if I started, I have to finish it, but no, not anymore. Because there's just so much out there. And then, so I might have like 5 or 6 books going at the same time, and depending on what kind of mood I'm in, you know, it depends on what I read. You know, that's usually the way, how I operate anyway, and just hopefully the good characters, right? The good characters, and that's my first thing. And I think all readers, you know, I thought a lot about, you know, I thought about this question, you know, what does make a good book? But I think readers want to be entertained. I mean, first and foremost, probably, right? They want to laugh. I do. I want to laugh too. I also want to be moved. So I think what makes a good book for me, I do want to mention this. I've been teaching the same author for, if I count graduate, when I was a graduate assistant, I've been teaching David Sedaris for 17 years since he really became famous. And I started teaching him early on. A friend of mine said, hey, you should check this guy out. You'd really like him. He's hilarious. And I started reading his stuff, and I just thought it's just great. And so I started teaching his work, and every year, every semester, students come up to me and say, I've never bought a book in my life, but I went out and bought more of David Sedaris' work. And because he has that humor and he has that tragedy, you know, you have to have both. So the story has some weight. And he's writing about nonfiction. He's writing about ordinary things. He's writing about his dysfunctional family. You know, and when you read that, you're like, oh, I can relate to that. Or I've done that. And he's not afraid to write about his mistakes or how he struggled. And I think that's the key. That's what's made students so excited about his work in my classes. And then if I flip it to fiction, what I did this last year was there's an author named Alan Eskins who wrote a book called The Life We Bury. And that book, the students had the same reaction to it. And he's a fairly new writer. He has 5 or 6 books out now, but that book is getting made into a motion picture right now. And he's just got a fabulous story himself. The book was rejected, I think, by 140 agents and then finally picked up, and they sold it right away. And now it's being made into a movie. I think it's translated now into 17 different languages. And it's full of adventure, but every character in his book, there's a purpose for him. Whether that character wants a drink of water or that character's gonna do something. You know, he doesn't leave anybody just out there hanging. There's a reason why they're there. And the characters all mean a lot to the readers, to my students and myself. I really like that book. So that's another, you know, so yeah, that's kind of a long answer to your question, but I hope that kind of answers it.
Do you have a favorite literary character yourself that has sort of traveled with you throughout life? And
I think probably if you go back to Hunter S. Thompson or Charles Bowden when I met him later in his life. You know, I went up to Bowden when I met him at the South Dakota Book Festival, and I put my leg up on a table and I showed him my tattoo of Gonzo on my leg, and he said to me, he goes, yeah, he goes, I know that guy. And I told him, you know, but you're much smarter than he ever was. And that's kind of how we hit it off. And because he was, you know, and he was a ghostwriter for Hunter S. Thompson, actually, for one of his books. And he taught me, you know, so those characters, those real life writers, I mean, there's so many, we could go through a long list, but a lot of them are nonfiction writers. Because I think what, you know, I'm really interested in writers that are trying to make positive change in the country, in the world, you know, through their writing.